From Tomahawk to Rhinelander, from Anago to Eagle River, and everywhere in between, it's time for the Sports Q on WJJQ. Now, here is your host, Hunter Baumgart.
Welcome in. As we start tonight's show, we're not going to have the discussion that I thought we'd be having. I thought we'd be having the discussion of previewing the NFC Championship game. Packers making it back there for the third year in a row. How could they get back? How could they get to the Super Bowl after being back to the NFC Championship game for the third straight year? Thought that was the conversation that we were going to be having tonight. The conversation of, can Matt LaFleur scheme up something against the Rams or the Buccaneers? Can Aaron Rodgers have a all-time type game to get them to the Super Bowl? No, not having that discussion at all. We are talking about a number one seeded Green Bay Packers team who tied for the best record in the NFL, losing to a six seed that came in with an injured quarterback and a not as talented defense as years past, a banged up pass rusher in Nick Bosa, and a team that the Packers beat earlier this year on their home turf. And that team, that six seed that I mentioned, came in and beat the number one seeded Packers and ended the Packers season abruptly on Saturday night. I am Hunter Baumgart, your host. We'll be talking Wisconsin and local sports up until 7 o'clock tonight here on the Sports Q. And like I mentioned, it's going to be a different conversation than I had thought. But I've got thoughts. There's no doubt about it. And I've got thoughts on this Green Bay Packers loss to the San Francisco 49ers. And I want to hear yours as well as we go throughout tonight. We're going to have two guests tonight, 6:05. We're going to do a deep dive into the details of this game and what happened to the Green Bay Packers. Jordy Ramirez is going to join me. Not only is he a Packers reporter, but also he dives in, you know, he's more of a football scout as well. So he dives in and kind of gets down to it. What really happened for the Green Bay Packers that led to this loss against San Francisco. And so I'm excited to talk to him because he did a deep dive basically Sunday and Monday. You know, they lose Saturday, but Sunday and Monday, he went back and watched this game again and kind of looked at with the all 22 film, meaning the film where you can see everything happening on the field. And so that's what he did. And so he went back and he watched the game again and watched the specific details. Now, I did some of this as well, but I think he having that football mind and that scout mind and background will have some really interesting thoughts on the Green Bay Packers loss and some of the details that he could see and how this Green Bay Packers team somehow lost to the San Francisco 49ers on Saturday night. So looking forward to that. Jordy joins me at 6:05. 6:40, we're going to talk Tomahawk sports with the athletic director at Tomahawk High School, Scott Parsons. He'll join me to talk Tomahawk winter sports at 6:40. But other than that, it is you on the phones. It is my thoughts on this Packers loss, and I want to hear from you at 715-453-4481. If you have thoughts, feel free to call them in. Obviously, this not only is a discussion about the Packers loss to the 49ers, but we'll also get to the future of Aaron Rodgers, the future of this Packers team. What did this loss mean for the future? Did it have any bearing on Rodgers' decision? We'll get into all that. Coming up at about 6:25 is when we'll get into Rodgers in the future. But we got to start with the game, because that is, I think, the most important part of all of this, is this loss to the San Francisco 49ers and how it happened. And like I mentioned, if you have any thoughts, who's to blame for this, right? Is it the special teams? Is it the offense? Is it a combination, right? Is it Coach Matt LaFleur? All of which, could be blamed in some sort of fashion. We're going to get into all of that right now. So if you have any thoughts, 715-453-4481. We're also live on the Hunter Baumgart Sports Facebook page. So if you're interested in watching the first part of the program tonight, I'm going to go live, I think, till 6 o'clock, since we're talking Packers all the way until then. So definitely go to there as well. If you want to like the Hunter Baumgart Sports Facebook page, we're live there. You can see the video aspect of the show. So here's we're just going to kind of go thing by thing here of this game. You know, we talked last Wednesday on the Sports Q, and I gave you my keys to the game. And we're going to kind of go key by key here, because almost all of them didn't happen. And that was a big reason why the Green Bay Packers lost this game. So let's start with one of the keys that I had last week. And that's with Aaron Rodgers. And a lot of the blame has been put on Aaron Rodgers for this loss. I think some rightfully so, some not rightfully so. So let's get into the play of Aaron Rodgers in this game. Because going into the game, I said Aaron Rodgers needs to play like Aaron Rodgers. He needs to play like the MVP that we saw him play like the last 10, 12 weeks of the season when he was playing almost immaculate football. He wasn't turning the ball over. He was playing like an MVP and thus is probably going to win his fourth overall MVP and is his second in as many years. The first game between the Packers and the 49ers, Aaron Rodgers completed 69.7% of his passes. Okay, so he 69.7% of his passes against the 49ers in the first game in week three, in which they beat the 49ers by a final score of 30-28. In that game, he completed 69% of his passes. How many passes do you think he completed on Saturday night against the 49ers? Think of a number in your mind, okay? So he completed, first of all, 69.7 in that first meeting where the Packers won, where he led that game-winning drive, right? And they got to the field goal. They got Mason Crosby to kick the game-winning field goal. 69.7%. In the game on Saturday night, he completed 68.9% of his passes. So I'm guessing in your mind, you went lower than that. You probably thought there was a 10, 15, maybe 20% difference between how many passes he completed in that first win over San Francisco and how many passes he completed, that completion percentage, I should say, which is basically, you know, how many passes you complete and how many throws you have. That only went down by 0.8% from the first meeting of these two teams to the second meeting of these two teams. And Davante Adams was about the same as well. He averaged 10 yards per catch in the game Saturday night. He averaged 11 yards per catch against San Francisco the first time. So the stats aren't huge difference-wise from the first meeting of these two teams to the second on Saturday night. So the question becomes, how bad did Rodgers play? Do we take what the stats say, or do we take what our eyes saw? And it's an interesting debate because the stats would tell you he didn't throw more than one more incompletion in this game compared to that week three game against San Francisco. Yet he's being bashed for his play on Saturday night, and I think I know why. What did Rodgers do in that week three game against San Francisco that he didn't do in the loss on Saturday night? He completed about the same amount of passes. He played, you know, when you look at the completion percentage, it was about the same. But what did he do in week three that he didn't do on Saturday night? Complete a game-winning or game-saving drive. It's as simple as that. That was the difference. He didn't go on a game-winning drive, a game-saving drive when he had the opportunity to do so. And Rodgers has set the bar so high, and that bar is up there not only because of his play in the past, but also his confidence that he exudes in interviews and on the field, etc., that we expect him to be able to, when given the chance, bring the team down the field to win the game. He did it in week three, but he didn't do it in the divisional round playoff loss. And when Rodgers is a surefire Hall of Famer, a guy who's going to go down as one of the best and most talented quarterbacks to ever play the game, and we've seen many, many game-winning drives before, that is what we expect. So you compare the stats between the two games, right? They aren't a whole lot different. The Week 3 matchup between San Francisco and Green Bay, he was 23 for 33 for 261 yards. On Saturday night, he was 20 for 29 with 225 yards. However, he did have those two touchdowns in the first meeting. And most importantly, with just 37 seconds on the clock, he led the team on a drive to score the game-winning field goal. And you may say, well, Hunter, Rodgers didn't have the opportunity to do that this time because the 49ers kicked the game-winning field goal as time expired. So he didn't have an opportunity to go down and win this game. Right, but before that, the Packers had the ball not once, but twice after they were up 10-3, and they still couldn't go down and score. They went up 10-3 with 11 minutes and 27 seconds left in the game. They went on a great 9-minute drive, took a bunch of time off the clock, had to unfortunately settle for a field goal, but they were up 10-3. It was the second best drive of the night. Their first best was that first drive, which was just sensational as they went down the field. Their second best drive of the night, they go 9 minutes. They finished it with 11:27 left. They're up by 7. The Packers then got the ball back after a huge fourth down stop by the defense inside Packers territory The Packers got a huge fourth down stop, a great play by Rashawn Gary. Devondre Campbell was all over it as well. They get that stop with 6 minutes and 14 seconds left. You know what Rodgers had time to do there? Go down and produce a game-winning drive. But what did the offense do? What did the offense do? Nothing good. Aaron Jones ran the ball for 2 yards on first down. Then a pass to the right side was incomplete to Devontae. Rodgers tried to thread the needle down the right sideline to Davante Adams. You may remember the play. And I looked at a breakdown of that incompletion to Davante, and Alan Lazard was open over the middle. But all Rodgers looked at on that entire play was Davante Adams. And there's a viral video going around. You may have seen it on social media. You may have seen it on a TV show. Of the next drive when Rodgers did the same thing, when Lazard was wide open over the middle, but Davante Adams was the target, and he threw a deep ball to Davante Adams on the next drive. No, this is the drive before that, when he actually looked to the right sideline for Davante. Rodgers was so focused on Davante the last 2 drives that he passed up 2 chances to complete a 15 to 20 yard pass on the last 2 drives. Game changers? I think so. Imagine if he completes that first one to Lazard that I just talked about. Again, 6 minutes left. This is before the block punt. He makes that throw to Lazard instead of being set on Davante from the start of that play. It's a big gain and a much lesser chance, even if a punt is blocked, for a touchdown to happen on that punt or on a blocked punt. And to be honest, nobody was scoring on that Packers defense on Saturday night. That Packers defense was playing exceptional. And do I think the 49ers could go down and score a touchdown? Right there up 10-3, the Packers are. No. Packers defense never gave up an offensive touchdown. But what happens? It's an incomplete pass to Davante down the right sideline. Rodgers is then sacked as the 49ers bring the pressure. It's fourth down, block punt, boom, it's 10-10. Packers then get the ball back. And I'm thinking to myself in the press box, right? I'm thinking, all right, it's Aaron Rodgers. There's plenty of time. It's a tie ball game. All they need is a field goal. We can go down, waste a bunch of time off the clock. All you need is a field goal. First down. Pass incomplete. And not only was it incomplete on first down, but the Packers then get called for an ineligible man downfield on this play. And I heard John Kuhn, former Packer, who hosts a show on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. He was talking about this was the time in the game, and he's the sideline reporter also for the Packers radio network. You remember John Kuhn. He was part of the Super Bowl championship team in Green Bay. Played with Aaron Rodgers. And he talked about that this was the time in the game that John Kuhn thought to himself, man, Aaron Rodgers just isn't there mentally right now. Because that incompletion on first down with 4:10 left in a tie ball game, that play was a run-pass option. And you're like, Hunter, what does that mean? Well, just it's exactly what it is. That run-pass option is exactly what it is. It means exactly what it sounds like. He had the option to either give it to Aaron Jones to run or pass the football. And they run these a lot. Because it gives Rodgers the opportunity to decide, you know, if he whatever he likes on the defensive side. He can give it to Jones, he can throw it, whatever it happens to be. What did he decide to do? He decided to pass, which is fine, but in that case, if you are going to pass in that scenario, it has to be a quick throw. Why? Because the offensive line is still blocking like a run play. So they're going to get further and further down the field, thinking the running back is running behind them. And on a pass play, if you throw the football, a lineman cannot be down the field that far, right? Or else it's a penalty. And thus, eventually they had an ineligible man down the field because the old lineman is 10 yards down the field thinking he's blocking for a run play. And that is a simple, simple thing. And Rodgers knows that. So the fact that he didn't see that and you know, just throw it away right away is mind-boggling. So what does he do? He rolls to his right and then throws it away. He avoids the pressure, rolls to his right, throws it away. And by that time, the ineligible offensive lineman is downfield. It costs him 5 yards. It's now first and 15. The rest of the drive doesn't go anywhere. And the 49ers go down and win the football game on a field goal by Robbie Gould. But this is exactly why I said in my keys to the game last week that Rodgers had to play like the Rodgers that we saw the last 10 to 12 weeks of the season. Not because I didn't think they could beat the 49ers unless Rodgers had this monster game. Rodgers hasn't had monster games this year, but he's been on point with passes. He's gotten the ball out quick. He's spread the ball around to open guys. He's handled pressure well because he's been able to get the ball out quick. And that is the Rodgers the Packers needed in the divisional round, and that's not who they got. You got the guy that we've seen in other playoff losses of the past 3 years. The guy who melts a bit under pressure. He gets happy feet in the pocket. Forces the ball to Devontae. Does things that are uncharacteristic of him in most games. But this side of him comes out, and in the last 3 years, it has led to the Packers losing in the playoffs. Now, in 2019 against the 49ers, when they lost to them, was the defense to blame too? Absolutely. They let the 49ers run all over them, over 200 yards rushing in that game for the 49ers. So the defense could be blamed as well. How about last year? Was the defense to blame too? Yes. They let up that awful play before halftime. But also last year, we saw some of what we saw on Saturday night. The things I mentioned, like happy feet and melting under pressure when the Buccaneers were able to put pressure on him last year. It was there last year in that loss, and then on Saturday night, it felt like it all came to a head. And it was so many of the plays, where Rodgers was under pressure and uncomfortable back there and not getting the ball out quickly, and he was locked in on Devontae. And those two kind of went hand in hand, where Rodgers might have been locked on Devontae, and by the time he gets off of Devontae because he's not open, he's already under pressure and can't throw to another player. Just look at the stats. 9 catches for Devontae Adams, 9 catches for Aaron Jones. Otherwise, 1 catch for Lazard and 1 catch for Lewis. Rodgers had 20 completions on Saturday night. Jones and Adams combined for 18 of those 20. Lots of Aaron Jones' catches were because of just the dump-offs and going back and looking at a fair amount of Rodgers' throws like I did. You could clearly see he had guys open and was too worried about the incoming pressure, just didn't see them, and would throw to Jones for a few yards, and that's why Jones racked up that many catches. He got most of the yardage he had. He had over 100 yards, but 75 of those were on that huge play down the right sideline before halftime. So we didn't get the Rodgers that we had seen the last 10 weeks and had made him an MVP this year, and that was a main reason why, to me, the Packers didn't win. Other reasons, you know, another key to the game that I mentioned last week on the show was starting fast, and they got up 7-0, and that was perfect. They then got a 3-and-out and have the opportunity then, the defense got a 3-and-out, and the offense had an opportunity to go up 14-0. But then Mercedes Lewis fumbles, and that was huge. And my last key to the game was honestly, we did a whole segment on it 2 weeks ago during the bye week. And I played clips of the NFC Championship game press conference of Matt LaFleur after the Packers had lost to Tampa Bay last year. Remember, we did that whole first segment on Matt LaFleur and how he needs to be on his A game in the playoffs. And Matt LaFleur had admitted he wasn't on his game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year in that NFC Championship game. Guess what happened again? LaFleur wasn't on his A game on Saturday night. And my last key last week for this game was LaFleur cannot get away from what got them there. Now, did he get away from what got them there? I don't think so. I don't think that was the problem. But LaFleur is to blame somewhat for the special teams mistakes. They only had 10 guys on the field for the last field goal when they should have had 10. And obviously the mistakes that led to the block punt, the block field goal, simple mistakes that should have been corrected in practice, yet they came back to bite the Packers. And again, Matt LaFleur came out and said after the game, he needs to be better. How about specifically on special teams? This is what LaFleur said about being better on special teams.
Yeah, it's extremely disappointing. Especially when you look at what happened tonight. Again, these are things I got to do a better job, obviously, and be more involved to make sure that those types of things don't happen, that we're putting these guys in the right position, that we're coaching them the right way. And I mean, ultimately it all falls on me.
Okay. So already saying, you know, it all falls on me when it comes to special teams. How about his opening statement? Came up to the podium on Saturday night after the game and said this.
Obviously I didn't do enough to get our team prepared to win a football game. And certainly when we only scored 10 points offensively, I put that all on myself. I got to be better than that.
He didn't do enough to prepare the team for the football game. So now, not only was he not on his A game last year during the game against the Buccaneers, but now he didn't prepare the team enough, okay? Now, Another clip on the offensive struggles.
Obviously, I didn't do a good enough job putting our guys in position to make plays, and that's about it.
How about on the play of Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I think Aaron did everything he could. He was under a lot of duress. I think it's more to do with I didn't put our guys in position to make enough plays. And I take that very personally. I'm going to do everything in my power to improve upon that, because scoring 10 points is not going to get it done.
Yeah, scoring 10 points isn't going to get it done. So it's interesting. There's a difference between the coach wanting to take the blame for his guys and truly knowing he wasn't as good as he should have been. Because some people will take that as LaFleur just taking the blame so his players and coaches underneath him don't have to. And there's some of that. There's no doubt about it. LaFleur takes the blame for his players, for his coaches, more than really, maybe any other coach that I've seen. Definitely more than Mike McCarthy, his predecessor. So obviously, that's a little different for us Packers fans or Packers media who've covered the Packers to think about that. But I think there's a difference there. When he repeats it constantly and says the team wasn't prepared and that is on him, that is LaFleur admitting he should have been better, and that is why it was a key to the game. Matt LaFleur is, I think, one of the better coaches in the NFL. And I thought after the last 2 years of being in the playoffs, this is the third year, he will have known what it's like. He won't, maybe cave under pressure, right? He'll be more on his A game. But unfortunately, that just wasn't the case. That just wasn't the case. And it sounds like maybe it was even more the preparation. He said also on Monday that he had to be more detailed about his preparation. So maybe, the game plan wasn't bad, and we'll get more into the game plan with Jordy Ramirez, Packers reporter, coming up. But I think it was LaFleur again costing the Packers a little bit, especially on the special teams. Because, sure, you can want Mo Drayton, the special teams coordinator, fired all you want, but that reflects on the coach as well. That reflects on Matt LaFleur, right? Mike Pettine, everybody wanted Mike Pettine gone after the defense gave up what they did against the Buccaneers last year. It's like, I got to get rid of Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator. And now it's all, I got to get rid of Mo Drayton, the special teams coordinator for the Packers. Well, but some of that has to fall on the head coach, Matt LaFleur. That has to reflect him, the guys he's putting in positions, right? He talked about not putting his players in positions to be successful. He's also, I don't know if he's putting his coaches in positions to be successful. So something to think about. So the formula to the Packers last three playoff losses has been somewhat the same, right? Except on defense. Defense was bad in 2019. It was a little better last year. It was outstanding on Saturday night. But when it comes to the offense and when it comes to coaching, those two have been consistent kryptonites of the Green Bay Packers in these last three playoff losses. When we return before 6 o'clock, I'll get to a couple of the comments I got on Facebook and Instagram today about who to blame for this Packers loss. We'll get to that next on the Sports Q.
Where Northern Wisconsin comes for in-depth Wisconsin sports talk. From youth sports to the pros, you are listening to the Sports Q with Hunter Baumgart on WJJQ.
Bremen Merrill Ford will make your next vehicle buying experience easier than you think. How? Bremen Merrill Ford will give you the absolute best price on your new Ford, whether it be on the lot, incoming, or ordered specifically for you. In addition to the best price, Bremen Merrill Ford has been ranked first in overall sales experience and sales satisfaction, making it easier than you think to order your new 2022 Ford today. With Bremen Merrill Ford's experienced sales staff, your wants and needs will be heard. And instead of settling for something that isn't your dream vehicle, come in and order that perfect new truck or SUV today. Come see why everyone is saying it's so easy at Bremen Merrill Ford. Exit 211 South, Merrill. Online at BremenMerrillFord.com.
It's easier than you think at Bremen Merrill Ford.
When 140-mile-per-hour winds come out of nowhere and try to wipe you off the map, when you look up and see sky where your roof used to be, when the power's out and stays out for 7 or 8 or 10 days, when the phone lines are down and the cell phones have all gone dead, you find out who your friends are. That's the silver lining. To find out more about West Bend Mutual Insurance and the silver lining, contact CIS Insurance Group in Tomahawk at 715-453-3366. CIS Insurance Group Tomahawk.
Welcome back to the Sports Q. I'm Hunter Baumgart, your host, talking Wisconsin and local sports up until 7 o'clock tonight, as we do each and every Wednesday evening. So I put out on my Hunter Baumgart Sports Facebook page, feel free to give it a like, and we're live over there right now. And feel free to head over there and give it a like. I also took comments today about who do you think is to blame for this Packers loss. Did it on Instagram at Hunter B on Air and also Hunter Baumgart Sports Facebook page. So let's read some of these comments and I'll react to them here before we get to the 6 o'clock news in a couple of minutes. Thomas says on Facebook, wow, there's so many people to blame. Honestly, I'll go back to Matt LaFleur. The game plan was not enough to get it done. The weather's not an excuse. Mercedes Lewis should have caught that pass that he fumbled, but the special teams, oh my gosh. I propose an idea. We play some of our starters on special teams, get rid of Mo Drayton. I remain optimistic Rodgers is coming back. This is going to be quiet this the offseason. Let's see where the turmoil starts. So, Thomas, appreciate the comment. I think, it does go back to Matt LaFleur. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It does go back to Matt LaFleur. And I had Dan said that as well on the Instagram at Hunter B on Air. I think it does go back to Matt LaFleur, right? These coordinator selections, right? He decides who are his coordinators. Now, the offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett, is fantastic. And he's getting a lot of run right now as a possible head coach at some spots around the NFL. And we'll see if he leaves for a head coaching job. But the Mo Drayton decision on special teams, and also not just the decision, but also the decision throughout the season not to address special teams. It really seemed like they didn't really do a deep dive on special teams throughout the season, unfortunately. They didn't go and fix these problems that could have been fixed. So that's an unfortunate part. Also, we had, Rob said on Instagram, coming from the Bears fan, that game the blame is on the special teams offense and coaching. Yeah, I think you sum it up nicely there, Rob. I think there's no doubt about it. I think it's all three of them. I think it's special teams. I think it's offense. I think it's coaching. And it's really unfortunate because this was a Super Bowl or bust season for the Green Bay Packers. And it was bust. It was a bust. Was this season a successful season? No, I don't think so. I don't think this was a successful season. This was the team that could go to the Super Bowl. And this was the team that had the defense to do it. They had the MVP quarterback. They had the offensive pieces. Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, Alan Lazard had come up big, and they didn't do it. And I think it's a major disappointment. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to Jordy Ramirez. He's going to join me in about 5 minutes to talk all things Packers. Packers reporter and football scout will talk to him. Scott Parsons, Tomahawk High School Athletic Director, joining me later in the hour as well. And we'll talk about Rodgers' future with the Packers. That's all next on WJJQ Tomahawk. Sports Q continues after the news.
Supreme Court Justice Breyer to retire.
He is known as a reliable liberal.
Fed signals rate hikes.
The economy no longer needs sustained high levels of monetary policy support.
Russia-Ukraine waiting game.
It remains up to Russia to decide how to respond.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Stephen Breyer, the oldest justice on the U.S. Supreme Court and the anchor of its liberal wing, plans to retire at the end of the term in June. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
He is somebody who has had an influence on sentencing guidelines, on gun rights, on women's rights to an abortion, all of these hot-button issues.
Whom will President Biden tap to replace Justice Breyer?
I'm Stephen Portnoy. Out of apparent deference, noting Stephen Breyer has yet to publicly announce his intentions, the president had little to say on word of the justice's impending retirement.
Let him make whatever statement he's going to make, and I'll be happy to talk about it later.
But the White House has reaffirmed Mr. Biden's commitment to nominating the first black woman to the high court. Senate Democrats intend to move swiftly once a choice is named, pointing to the lightning speed 35-day confirmation that Republicans gave Justice Amy Coney Barrett in the heat of the 2020 election.
The Federal Reserve signals a rate hike soon, Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
The economy no longer needs this highly accommodative policy that we put in place, so it's time to stop asset purchases first and then, at the appropriate time, start to shrink the balance sheet.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken on tensions between the U.S. and Russia over Ukraine.
We're open to dialogue. We prefer diplomacy, and we're prepared to move forward where there is the possibility of communication and cooperation.
if Russia de-escalates its aggression toward Ukraine.
The U.S. and NATO have rejected Russia's demand to permanently ban Ukraine from joining NATO and say allied deployments of troops and military equipment in Eastern Europe are non-negotiable. CBS's Holly Williams with more.
Russia maintains that it has no plans to invade, but if Russia invades or launches an attack, nobody knows what form that attack would take. So how do you plan for that? I mean, people are setting up bomb shelters here, renovating old Cold War bomb shelters, but beyond that, I mean, what do you do? Run for the hills? That's certainly not what Ukrainians are doing at this point.
North Korea has fired an unidentified projectile into the sea off its east coast. The Yonhap News Agency reports it would be the sixth missile test this month. The number of COVID-19 cases in the U.S. continues to decline. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky.
The current seven-day daily average of cases is about 692,400 cases per day, a decrease of about 6% over the previous week.
On Wall Street, the Dow closed down 130 points, NASDAQ up 3 points. Now this.
There's always something new under the sun. CBS Mornings, weekdays on CBS.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have any body to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
California gun owners are up in arms over a first-in-the-nation law in San Jose that will require them to carry liability insurance. KCBS's Matt Bigler.
At the gun exchange in San Jose, firearm fans were fuming over the city's new gun rules.
I think it's just another nail being put in the coffin of the Second Amendment rights.
Stan Yeager says the $25 to $35 annual fee and a requirement that gun owners carry liability insurance will make it too expensive for collectors like him who have multiple guns.
Is it going to bankrupt me to insure all my guns or what?
The city says the extra fees will pay for programs aimed at reducing gun violence. The ordinance is already being challenged in federal court by gun rights groups. Matt Bigler for CBS News, San Jose, California.
But not on Spotify for Neil Young. The streaming service is pulling Young's music because he doesn't want to be on the same platform as conservative podcaster Joe Rogan. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The forecast for the Northwoods tonight, plenty of clouds and breezy, temperature climbing up into the mid-teens. Southwest wind around 15 to 20 miles an hour, turning west late. A few light snow showers possible. Tomorrow mostly cloudy, chance of scattered light snow showers, high 22 in the morning and then falling. Northwest wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Cold out there tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low 9 below. Friday some sunshine, high of 10. The weekend looks quiet with partly sunny skies. Highs around 18 on Saturday, 26 on Sunday. Breezy and warmer Monday, high of 32. Could see some snow or mixed precipitation by Tuesday and Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Tony Schumacher for WJJQ.
It is 8 degrees in Tomahawk.
From Tomahawk to Rhinelander, from Anago to Eagle River, and everywhere in between, it's time for the Sports Q on WJJQ. Now, here is your host, Hunter Baumgart.
Welcome back to the program. Full hour left, so if you're just joining us and think you missed it, you didn't miss too much. Just my opening thoughts on the Packers' loss to the San Francisco 49ers, and we'll get more into that as the hour goes on up until 7 o'clock when Michael McGovern comes back here at WJJQ. Coming up at 6:40, we'll talk to Scott Parsons, Tomahawk High School Athletic Director, all about the winter sports season going on there at Tomahawk High School. Looking forward to talking to Scott at 6:40. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers and his future in Green Bay. What does it mean? And will Rodgers be back? Will he not? He gave a couple of not hints necessarily on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, but he really talked about what he won't do when it comes to retiring. Also, that all options are on the table, and also his timeline as well for when he'll make this decision. We'll get into all that in about 20 minutes. But first, let's go out to the WJJQ hotline and do a deeper dive into this Packers loss to the 49ers. Joining me here tonight on the Sports Q, excited to welcome back to the program, Jordy Ramirez, Packers reporter for ESPN Lacrosse and also football scout as well. And I'm excited to get into all the details of this Packers loss to the San Francisco 49ers. You can follow him on Twitter at Jordy Ramirez NFL. And Jordy, appreciate the time tonight. Wish it was under better circumstances. We were previewing the NFC Championship game, but unfortunately we have to talk about a loss. But how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you bringing me on. I kind of wish we were going to see each other again this weekend, but you know, things didn't work out that way. So hopefully next season.
Exactly. And yeah, for those listening, obviously, you know, Jordy covers the Packers. I have as well for WJJQ, and we usually sit next to each other there in the press box and exchange thoughts throughout the game. So I'm really excited to hear kind of, you know, after doing another deep dive, Jordy did another deep dive here after the game on Saturday night and kind of looked at all the details about this game. So I'm excited to get into all the different things that went into this Packers game and the reasons that they lost. I think the first question for you, Jordy, is what do you think was the number one reason that the Packers lost this game to the 49ers?
You know, I'm going to go a little bit different, a different way than just special teams. I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers. I think that after that first drive, there's the Mercedes Lewis fumble and then the Josiah DeGuara drop. He started to feel pressure from a very different O-line lineup, and he just started to have tunnel vision for Davante Adams, really. I wouldn't really say this for Aaron Jones. A lot of plays that went to him were just more designed to him, but he missed a lot of open guys. He was attacking the wrong side of the formation a lot of the times. I just think he lost trust in his teammates, the game plan, and the process. I think he had a rushed internal clock, and whenever that happens, he reverts back to hero ball, and hero ball for him is just trying to throw Davante Adams the ball a little bit too much, and I ultimately think that's why the defense fluttered. I think D'Amico Ryans had a good game plan, but there were still a lot of guys open, and Nathaniel Hackett and Matt LaFleur did have a good game plan to counter what D'Amico Ryans had.
And what did – we'll get into LaFleur's game plan in a moment, also the offensive line, as you mentioned there, but we'll start here with Rodgers since you mentioned him. And I think – when did it change, do you think? You know, because that first drive was almost perfect. I mean, I don't even know if they had a third down on that first drive. It was just right down the field, touchdown. But then what changed where he started losing that trust? Where in the game, I guess, did that change, do you think?
I think it was just a kind of progression, like I said. After that Mercedes Lewis fumble, the Josiah DeGuara drop over the middle, which, if I'm being honest, that was still kind of a bad throw from Aaron Rodgers. Should have been caught by Josiah DeGuara, but if he hits him in stride, that could be a really big gain. And then once he started to feel the interior pressure from Eric Armstead, the exterior pressure from Nick Bosa, that O-line really didn't hold up that well against those guys. That's when he really just started to not even stay in the pocket. He was throwing off platform a lot. He was getting off his spot, even if he didn't have to. And like I said, he just lost trust in what it seemed like just the whole team in general.
Yeah, it did. And it seems like, you know, that's kind of been a little bit of a theme, too. You know, when he gets under pressure in the playoffs, we saw it, you know, in San Francisco 2019 and against the Buccaneers a little bit last year as well, where it seems that sometimes he unfortunately, you know, goes into, like you mentioned, that hero ball mode. I do want to switch over to that offensive line because, you know, they started Billy Turner at left tackle. It was the first time that that combination of offensive line has been played this year and started this year. And what did you make of LaFleur deciding to do that in a game, not only just in a game that matters, but in a playoff game where it's win or go home?
You know, I was really surprised by that. To bring back a guy who had a month off and is recovering, you put Billy Turner at left tackle, where that experiment's already been tried. They tried it last year, and he struggled mightily, especially in that Tampa Bay NFC Championship game. And he does not look right at left tackle. I think his only spots he should play are right guard and right tackle. He's got a slow get-off. He's got an awkward set. And, you know, the funny thing is, Matt LaFleur talks about having the best five combination on that offensive line. For me, I thought that line would have been Yosh Nijman, John Runyon, Josh Myers, and here's the switch-up, Billy Turner at right guard and Dennis Kelly at right tackle. Lucas Patrick is constantly targeted when there's an elite interior D lineman such as Eric Armstead. Mm. Throughout the season, they had multiple games against teams with similar kind of interior linemen such as L.A. with Aaron Donald, Kansas City, Chris Jones, Chicago with Akeem Hicks, and they really try to isolate that matchup, and 90% of the time, I'd say, Lucas Patrick loses that battle. So that's the kind of way I would have went with the O-line. I'm not sure why Turner was at left, especially when Josh Diamond had so many snaps and looked way more comfortable than Billy Turner would at that spot.
Right, yeah. You know, Josh Diamond was a guy that a lot of people were praising throughout the season in his role to fill in, really, for David Bakhtiari and try to fill at least some of those shoes. Do you think what do you think was the ultimate reason, or maybe you just don't know it like a lot of us, you know, why they went without Josh Nyman in that game?
You know, I'm not going to keep praising Josh Nyman. I think he's done an adequate job. I don't think he's been as great as people have thought. I think Aaron Rodgers has protected him more, but I think the real reason they went there is just because of experience. They want an experienced O-line against that front four, and it's a playoffs, but to be honest, I don't think that spot would have been too big for Josh Nyman. I mean, he's played in some big games throughout the regular season. It's the playoffs. Yeah, he'd probably feel a little bit of nerves to begin with. But once you settle in, it's just another football game, you know. And I think Matt LaFleur is really regretting that decision.
And speaking of Matt LaFleur, we're talking to Jordy Ramirez, Packers reporter for ESPN Lacrosse and also a football scout as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Jordy Ramirez NFL, talking about the Green Bay Packers lost to the 49ers on Saturday night. Matt LaFleur, I want to talk about him a little bit, because how much in your eyes does this loss, you know, fall on LaFleur, and what did he think of his game plan?
You know, I think this really goes back to last January, when the decision to move to Mo Drayton was made in-house and not somebody out of the system. I think that, you know, the special teams is just a systemic issue. You have to move outside of your own building and try to find the guy to fix that. Matt LaFleur, I think, needs to start diving into special teams a little bit more, getting those meetings, start maybe putting more starters out there that can get downfield, make tackles, and, you know, protect the run lanes, and attention to detail, especially on that blocked field goal. Tyler Lancaster was about two, three steps too far back, and that's how that gap opened up. Just the simple stuff, even on the punt block, having somebody else block that interior guy other than the long snapper. With mistakes like that, those are just unacceptable. 10 guys on the field last play, all that needs to be cleaned up. So I think really that's, we can go that far back with Matt LaFleur. I thought he drew up a really good game plan offensively, him, Hackett, and Luke Getsy. But ultimately, like I said, Aaron Rodgers kind of disappointed executing the game plan.
Do you think Rodgers just kind of went away from the game plan? Like LaFleur, they had something else, you know, in mind, and basically Rodgers, once he lost trust in the team around him, just kind of started to do whatever he wanted to do?
Yeah, he reverted back to the 3 years ago. It's always talked about just that hero ball. He's just going to try to make a play. You know, he's not that young anymore. He's not that mobile. He still has great arm talent, but it's people can lock in on that. And this scheme, what Matt LaFleur has done, has made it so simple. If Aaron Rodgers has plays as, you know, a game manager, which sounds crazy, but he's the best game manager there is, because he can make every throw and do it so efficiently, get the ball out on time in the right place. Like I said, I think it's just a mentality thing with Aaron Rodgers. And once he starts to feel that pressure, once he starts to have a couple plays not go his way, that's when he reverts back to that hero ball.
And one of the things, and you mentioned it there just a couple of minutes ago about special teams, and I wanted to ask you, you know, it was some very simple mistakes that really led to those big plays for the 49ers. Was it really, you know, when you look back at that game, was it really just the simplest of mistakes that cost them that block field goal, block punt, and you know, the big returns on Saturday night, or was it something more that you saw when you went back and looked at it?
You know, I'd just say it's just that small attention to detail. It doesn't make any sense, some of these mistakes. I mean, you in practice you have these things straightened out. The fact that Mo Drayton has allowed this to happen all season long, all these mental errors, all the penalties, and there's just no phase of special teams that ever seemed right throughout the season, that's just unacceptable. Honestly, there should have possibly been a change even mid-season to try and get this fixed. And, you know, it is maybe the lowest phase of the game, but you still, those weaknesses will be exposed and really brought up in the playoffs. And San Fran did a really good job, especially on that blocked field goal, of studying what the Packers do. And one of their players actually knocked down the arm of Tyler Lancaster along that inside rush. So, again, it's just small things like that that you should see in the tape room, in practice, that you should have cleaned up.
That totally makes sense. Jordy Ramirez joining us here on the Sports Cue for a couple of minutes here tonight. Packers reporter for ESPN Lacrosse and a football scout as well. And so I want to look to the future a little bit, turn away from Saturday night just a little bit, and look at, well, we can go back a little bit because it's I want to talk about the defense for a moment. They played so well on Saturday night, you know, one of their best games of the year, in my opinion, and I would assume that you feel for the most part the same way. To you, after watching every game this team played, you know, this season, what are one or two players on that defense do you think made the biggest jump from week one to this last game against the 49ers?
The player I'd definitely say to me has improved the most is Eric Stokes. Mm. I think that Jaire Alexander and him will probably combine to maybe be the best cornerback duo in the NFL. If Eric Stokes can really work on those ball skills and start trusting his athleticism a little more, and sometimes getting away just from the fundamentals of once you see the ball released, find the man, he should have had probably, you know, five picks on the season, I'd say, at minimum. He had a lot of balls he could have gotten, especially that one on that flat route. But where I saw the improvement from Eric Stokes was his balance and staying in phase at the cornerback position. A lot of smaller guys or even really crisp route runners would get him off his feet and get the separation that way. He really fixed that this season. So the thing he really needs to work on is ball skills. And then obviously it's Rashawn Gary, the other guy. He's a budding superstar at the outside linebacker spot. Statistically and just more by the eye test, he looks like he could be one of the better outside linebackers in the game. Just a lot of coaching with him. It's just him. He always had the athletic ability, but he would over rush the quarterback and kind of break too far around the pocket. And now he's learned to turn speed into power. That's where you see a lot of those pressures and a lot of those sacks, the straight arms. So he plays the run really well too on that fourth down step. That was an incredible play. So I think those two are budding stars at their positions, and that defense has a lot of great pieces either under contract or they're on their rookie contracts. So it's looking bright on that side of the ball for the Packers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And if I remember right, isn't Stokes and Gary, would that be two of their last four first round picks? Is that right?
Yes, it would be.
Yeah. So you got some first-round picks that are really starting to step up for the Green Bay Packers, and looking forward to the future that defense has. Of course, most of the questions for the future come on the offensive side for the Green Bay Packers, and obviously the million-dollar question is what happens with Aaron Rodgers. You know, I'll ask it to you, Jordy. What do you think happens with Aaron Rodgers? Is he the starter week one next season for Green Bay?
You know, I would definitely say he is. I don't think he's going to retire. I don't think there's a better spot for Aaron Rodgers to be. I think that a lot of Packer fans were acting on emotion and still are about saying they don't want him to be there. You know, they're ready for the future. Be careful what you wish for. I think New England set a standard, you know, winning however many Super Bowls with Tom Brady and just that pursuit of excellence they had and the dynasty they built, that you need to win all these Super Bowls. It's not that easy to win the NFL. Green Bay has probably been the best team the last 2 years, but there's so many variables that go into those playoff games, and it's just you have to play your best each playoff game, and most times they don't show up. If they played their best, they are the best team. They most of the time win those games. They just have it. So I think going forward, Matt LaFleur said, you know, one of my biggest questions was the front office sold in the past, you know, few months? Are they sold? They want Aaron back. About midway through the season, they saw enough. They said, yep, we want him back. Let's go with the future with him still. Now, the biggest question for me is what they're going to do with Jordan Love. I'm not sure if they want to try to hold on to him, because I think Aaron Rodgers is going to finish his career as a Green Bay Packer, whether he plays one or two more years. But Green Bay probably – I think Green Bay still loves Jordan Love, and they want him to be possibly the future quarterback. And how couldn't you want a quarterback like that, especially after watching that Sunday night game between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes? You want to build off those attributes, mobile, big-armed quarterbacks, especially with good work ethic, which I've heard Jordan Love has. So if you can try to mimic that, I'm not saying he's going to become those guys, but if you can get close to that,
you know, Green Bay's in good hands.
If you, you know, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't, since you bring up Jordan Love, you know, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't come back and it is Jordan Love next year, you know, what are your thoughts on Jordan Love? Like you mentioned, you know, a couple of attributes there, but what are your overall thoughts as you've seen him develop?
You know, I've really liked his development. I think more or less he's focused so much on his footwork, his throwing motion. Sometimes it looks a little clunky and unnatural. And this is going back to what Matt LaFleur said in the preseason. He just needs to let it rip sometimes in the Kansas City game. He just needs to let it rip. He needs to trust his arm talent. He needs to trust his eyes. He needs to trust the feel. And really, for him to trust that, it's just going to be through game experience. You know, it's pretty tough just to get that always in practice. The game is sped up so much once you get in there. To be honest, I think, let's say, I think there's nearly the chances I put Aaron Rodgers being traded is about 5%. So if he gets, if he retires, I would still bet that, you know, Green Bay would probably win the NFC North next year and finish right around 10 wins, especially with some of the talent they're bringing back. I think Devonta Adams is still locked up as a Packer. So there'd still be some good weapons. I think that's still a top five offensive line that they all have under contract for next season. They still got good running backs. The biggest question marks are at tight end and wide receiver. So I still think this team is really built. I don't know why there's a lot of rebuild talk. There is some really good pieces on this team that people may have forgotten because of injury. But I think Green Bay is in a really good spot.
Last question for you. Do you still think Devonta Adams is locked up as a Packer? Do you think they franchise tag him, or do you think he signs a long-term deal?
This is where it gets tough. I think there's very little chance that they can franchise tag him. But it's also my thinking on it is I'm just putting my GM cap on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much money you want to pay to a receiver that is breaking the age of 30. There's a lot of decline after that. And obviously there is, you haven't seen any decline yet, but it's statistically, they always drop off after the age of 30 a little bit. So how much do you want to pay him? Do you really want to pay him that DeAndre Hopkins type money? And how much more money do you want to kick down the road? That's the biggest question. So I think they will extend him. For how long? I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to push it past 3-4 years. I'd just put it right around to that 3-year mark. But I do think they'll extend him.
We shall see. Should be a very interesting offseason, and Green Bay Packers, unfortunately, having the offseason come a little quicker than I think a lot of us expected. But, Jordy, really appreciate the time tonight. A lot of great insight. Really enjoy talking to you, and I'm sure we'll do it again during this offseason because we'll have a lot to discuss.
Yeah, most definitely, Hunter. Thanks for having me on.
That is Jordy Ramirez, Packers reporter and football scout, and you can check out his work at Jordy Ramirez NFL on Twitter, and so much info there. Just really, really fun conversation with Jordy, and just kind of sees different things that I may not pick up on during games. So really appreciate his time, and great to talk to him tonight. When we return, one of the last questions I asked him was, what does he think about Rodgers' future? He thinks he's coming back to Green Bay. I'll tell you what I think next and give you some clips of Rodgers and what he had to say about his future yesterday. That's next on the Sports Queue.
What does Hunter have queued up next in the Sports Queue? Find out in moments on WJJQ.
No matter who you're watching or where you're watching the big game, grab all your playoff foods at Triggs for this weekend's football action. Crystal Farms Cracker Cuts, 2 selected varieties, just $7. Wonderful Pistachios, 8-ounce, $5. Frank's Red Hot Snacks, selected varieties, $4.99. Enjoy Tula's Boneless Chicken Wings, 2-pound bucket, $10. Register to win a Craftsman snowblower and save on Budweiser or Bud Light 24 packs at $15.99. All at Triggs.
Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill invites you to dine in or carry out all your favorite menu selections, including soup, salad, sandwiches, wraps, and Chicago-style pizza. Billy Bob's also has their daily specials on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, plus the Friday fish fry. Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill, featuring happy hour Monday through Friday from 2 until 5. Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill, County Highway L, ready to serve you daily at 11 o'clock. Call 453-4984. That's 453-4984, Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill.
The snowmobile season is underway. Make sure you and your machine are ready for the trail with a stop at Bigfoot Stewart Express. For your machine, spark plugs, belts, AmSoil intercept, clots, and inject oil, carbide wear rods and track slides, find a nice selection of HJC helmets, jackets, and bibs, lacrosse boots, and ice armor gloves and mittens. Pick up your trail maps and gas up with mobile fuel at Bigfoot Stewart Express, North 4th Street, Tomahawk.
Warm ovens and great smells aren't the only reason people love working at Country Hearth. Job security at a third-generation family-owned company, great pay and benefits, and the opportunity to rise within the company are also in the mix. Besides production, there are a lot of other positions throughout the bakery. Maintenance fixes and maintains machines. Sanitation keeps the machinery and facility clean and safe. Shipping coordinates getting products from point A to point B, and there are delivery driver positions too. Are you ready to find the best fit for you? Find out more and apply today at countryhearthjobs.com.
Welcome back to the Sports Q on Northwoods 92.5 WJJQ. I'm Hunter Baumgart, your host. You can feel free to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I give my sports thoughts there and also preview the show there at Hunter B on Air on Twitter and Instagram and on the Hunter Baumgart Sports Facebook page as well. Just search Hunter Baumgart Sports and like the Facebook page there. So coming up in about 15 minutes, a little less than that, Scott Parsons, the Tomahawk High School Athletic Director, going to join us. But first, I want to get into kind of the next phase here for the Green Bay Packers, and that is life with or without Aaron Rodgers. And that's the big question heading into this offseason. We went through all of that offseason wildness last year. Was he going to come back? Was he not? Sounded like he didn't want to come back, and there was kind of this standoff, and then eventually he came to terms with the team and came back for this year and had an MVP season. So the question is he going to come back? Now, last spring when we were talking, it was about the Green Bay Packers not wanting necessarily Aaron Rodgers to let's put it this way. The Packers front office did not want to commit long-term to Aaron Rodgers. That's what we were talking about last spring. When Rodgers, the reports immediately came out, you know, I think it was right around the draft. Yeah, draft day that Aaron Rodgers wanted out of Green Bay. And so it was because Green Bay, the front office, the GM, you know, all those guys didn't want to commit to him long term. It seems now Rodgers has said that his relationship, and you'll hear it in a moment, that his relationship with Brian Gutekunst, the GM, has improved a lot. It seems the front office wants Aaron Rodgers back next year. Matt LaFleur was asked about this on Monday in his season-ending press conference. Hear the question from ESPN's Rob Domofsky, and then hear the answer. And I think you'll get a good feeling about what the Packers want as far as wanting Rodgers back next year.
Hey, Matt, you obviously said you guys want Aaron, or you want Aaron back, and you want him to retire here. Is that the final organizational decision on that? Or is there still, you know, some debate about, you know, that you guys have to have to make sure you guys want to move forward with him for another year?
No, every conversation I've been involved in with, you know, with Goody and Russ and Mark, we're all on the same page there. So there's no debate.
So Goody, obviously, the GM, Brian Gutekunst, Mark Murphy, the president, and Russ Ball, who's kind of the finances guy, basically, who handles all the, you know, finances of everything and keeping the books. They all want Rodgers back. That is something that if you asked Matt LaFleur that question in the spring, I think he would have said, and I think he did say, you know, I want Rodgers back. You know, I don't know if necessarily that, you know, they would have said, if somebody would have asked LaFleur, do you want him after 2022? I don't think he would have necessarily had that response that you just heard. But it sounds like everybody has pretty much came around that they want Aaron Rodgers to stick around. So the question is Aaron Rodgers going to stick around? Because it sounds like it's his decision now. So here is Aaron Rodgers, first of all, saying that basically we're going to have, okay, so I have three clips here. Let's play this one first. So Rodgers said, you know, obviously his predecessor, Brett Favre, what did he do? He retired and then he came back, right? So the question was posed to Aaron Rodgers. Okay, what's, you know, I don't think it was necessarily posed to him like this, but I think it was basically that Rodgers was talking about retirement and said, I wouldn't retire and then come back. So he first starts out by talking about that, and then he goes into his relationship with the GM, Brian Gutekunst, which has gotten a lot better this year, he said, and talks about that relationship and why he wouldn't want to do that to Brian Gutekunst. So let's hear this. This clip is from the Pat McAfee show. He was on that show yesterday, Aaron Rodgers talking yesterday.
One thing I would not do, 100% would not do, is retire and then, you know, come back a year later. Like, that's just...
Okay.
I don't have any desire to do that. That makes no sense. I feel like I'm at the place relationally with the Packers, you know, in a really good place, especially with Brian in the way our friendship and trust has grown, where
the GM,
it would be a simple conversation, and whatever comes out of the conversation is moving forward. There's not going to be any weird, you know, standoff, you know, war of silence or anything. It's, you know, Brian and I have had good conversations throughout the year, and when it, you know, when it comes time to make a decision, we'll have a conversation, and that'll be that. It won't be a long drawn out process, and I think that's what's best for me, for him, for the organization, and for all the other decisions that need to be made.
You know, the journey that Rodgers and this front office has went on over the past 12 months is kind of astonishing. I mean, if you would have played that clip to Aaron Rodgers, I think last spring, I don't know if he would have been, he'd been like, I don't know if I'm going to say that in the end of January, but he is end of January, 2022. And that's what he said, you know, wouldn't be fair to the organization. You know, my relationship now with Brian Gutekunst is better. The communication we've had has been great. So all of that is leading to this point now where the front office wants him back, and Rodgers wants to be respectful of the organization. Can't say necessarily that would have been the case had this, you know, had he talked, you know, April or May of last year. So I just think it's very interesting where we're at as far as where Aaron Rodgers is compared to what he was at last spring and how kind of the tables have turned, if you will. Speaking of tables, Rodgers says all options are on the table.
I don't think there's any free agency is not. I don't think that's an option, but I think but everything is definitely on the table. There are things that seem more plausible or more likely, which I won't necessarily get into. But the most important thing is first the commitment to playing and to going to the off season and training and all that stuff is the first. And then after that, it's just conversations with my agent and Brian and looking at the desires of the team and the, you know, the kind of the mindset moving forward, and then make a decision from there.
So it's interesting, you know, all options are on the table. Obviously the first thing, like you said, is committing to playing, because no matter where he plays, whether it's Green Bay or somewhere else, that obviously is going to be, you know, he has to commit to playing first. So I'm going to get to what I think here in just a minute, but I think two options are really rearing their heads right now as far as the two front runners. And I don't know if I necessarily, you know, I think I've changed what I'd want, I think, over the last 72 hours. So we'll get to that in a moment as well. But last clip here, Rodgers talks about the timeline when he wants to make this decision.
I think even sooner than that. I mean, I'd like to, again, be respectful of the organization. I think the most, you know, one decision that will be upcoming will be obviously Devontae and his future with the team. There still is this thing called the franchise tag, which I, you know, don't think 17 wants the franchise. Like, no player ever wants the franchise.
Ever!
But that decision on that, I believe, is in February. And in late February. So I think that should be enough time to make a decision by then. I don't want to put myself on a specific date, but I do want to be sensitive to Devontae and many other guys who you know, have decisions to make on their own futures. And to drag it out past free agency would be disrespectful to the organization and to those guys, and that 100% will not happen.
So there you go. So we for sure know we're going to get a decision by the end of February, or March 16th is the beginning of free agency. So we're for sure going to get a decision by then, but it sounds like the end of February, really. And I think Devontae Adams is going to play a huge role in this, whether he comes back or not. I think that's a huge role. I think, you know, it's hard to imagine Rodgers wanting to play in Green Bay if Devontae Adams is not there, because if you don't sign Devontae Adams back, you know, Rodgers said after the game on Saturday night, he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. So if he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild, if you don't sign Devontae Adams, you still have a talented team. And there's no doubt that I think Aaron Rodgers and the talented team around him could do damage and could win for sure the NFC North and possibly make a playoff run next year, even if you don't have Devontae Adams. But is that something Rodgers wants to try at this point in his career? I'm not sure. I think the most likely two options here are is he retires or he returns to the Packers. Because trading him away, I agree with Jordy Ramirez, who we just had on the show. I just don't. I give it a little more chance. I get 10-15% chance that they trade Rodgers, just because this team, this front office, I think really wants Rodgers back. And so if the trade was going to happen, I feel like they would be in their mindset of last year where we want to go to Jordan Love after 2021. That's what it seemed like. The mindset last year, it seemed like in the spring and you know, coming out of the last season was, we want to go to Jordan Love after 2021, so we want to have, you know, Aaron Rodgers be our quarterback for this season, and then after this season, which just ended, go to Jordan Love. But it sounds like the front office has changed their tune, and they want Rodgers back. So why they would trade him away, I'm not so sure. I think the only reason they would trade him away is if Rodgers says, look, I am not going to play here, so you're going to want to get some, you know, draft capital or whatever for me, or else, you know, I'll retire, basically, and then you won't be able to get anything from me. So, and that, you know, that it's possible, but I think it's more unlikely. Again, I think he's at a place in his life where he has other interests that he could pursue if he retires. He said in that interview as well, and we don't have time to play the clip, but he said, you know, I'm not scared of retirement. I'm not scared of retirement. I'm not scared of the uncertainty. He's at a place for his life where he could really retire. And I know, and you think about it, and you think about like Ben Roethlisberger retiring this year and Drew Brees retiring a couple years ago and the way they looked at the end of their careers, they looked like a shell of themselves. But Aaron Rodgers looks like an MVP. And I know he looked kind of like a shell of himself in that divisional round playoff game. But don't get that clouding your judgment too much, because you think back, Rodgers has had some vintage moments in the playoffs. The Arizona Cardinals Hail Marys, I will never forget. The guy brought the team 95 yards down for a touchdown on 2 40-plus-yard pass plays, including one Hail Mary, to get the Packers into overtime in that football game. And then he never touched the ball in overtime, so we never had a chance in that overtime. Right? Rodgers has had some playoff moments and obviously regular season moments where he's brought the team down and given the team a chance. He took that team on a magic carpet ride in 2016 and got them to the NFC Championship game. That throw to Jared Cook in 2016 in Dallas, right, to get him into field goal range and beat the Dallas Cowboys in Jerry World. Rodgers has had some vintage Packers moments in the playoffs. And so to say that he, you know, looks like a Drew Brees or Ben Roethlisberger, he might have against the 49ers on Saturday night, but that was one game. So I don't think we can let that cloud our judgment. As Jordy Ramirez said, be careful what you wish for. So at first, you know, sitting in that press box on Saturday night, it did feel like the end of the Rodgers era. It just felt like it. Devastating loss. You know, it just felt like, okay, this is probably how it ends. But now, you know, 4 days later, I don't know. You know, what the front office has said, what Matt LaFleur has said for the front office, that they want him back. I'm not sure. I could see Rodgers a little more coming back next year than I could 4 days ago. But we shall see. And the whole season, if you had asked me the whole season, I would have said he's coming back. Because the interviews, everything, he made it sound like he was coming back. The only thing that switched my mind was that loss on Saturday night and how it looked, how he looked on the field in the cold. Kind of reminiscent of Brett Favre in the cold against the Giants back in 2007 in his last game as a Packer. So that's kind of what crept into my head on Saturday night. But then again, 4 days later, I'm thinking, I have a feeling he either comes back or he says, I'm done. Or he says, I'm done. We shall see. We'll cover it on the Sports Cue every week. We'll talk Tomahawk Sports next with the athletic director, Scott Parsons, on the Sports Cue.
Talking Packers, Badgers, Brewers, Bucks, and local sports. You are listening to the Sports Cue with Hunter Baumgart on WJJQ.
During the Start Something New event at Brickner's Park City, Jeep, Chrysler, Dodge, and Ram in Merrill, take 0% for 72 months plus a whopping $2,000 rebate on Ram 1500 quad cab bighorn trucks. Crew cabs also get 0 for 72 and a $1,000 rebate. We have over 15 available this month, including demo units, so hurry in before they're all sold. Business owners need a new work truck for the spring and summer construction season? Get it ordered now. We are seeing sold order units being delivered in about 100 days after order. There will be no stock units available, so plan ahead and let's get your name on a 25 to 5500 Ram heavy-duty truck or ProMaster cargo van today. On the Jeep side of the Brickners and Merrill lot, you will find the all-new Jeep Compass 4x4 Sport Utility, along with the hot-selling all-new Jeep Grand Cherokee L models, and our last batch of four Jeep Renegade 4x4 Limiteds. Brickner's Park City, Jeep Chrysler Dodge and Ram in Merrill, 1-800-499-JEEP or on the web at bricknersparkcity.net.
Welcome back to the Sports Q on Northwoods 92.5 WJJQ. I'm Hunter. Time now to talk Tomahawk sports. Let's go out to the WJJQ hotline. Joining me here tonight on the Sports Q, excited to welcome back to the program the athletic director for Tomahawk High School, that is Scott Parsons. And Scott, really appreciate the time tonight. How are you?
I'm good, Hunter. Thank you again for having me. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
No problem at all, and looking forward to talking about the winter sports season as it's really in full swing now as we enter really the last month and a couple of weeks probably of the season as we get to the tournament in mid-February for some of the sports here. How have the winter sports season gone overall?
I'd say really, really well so far. And again, if you want a little perspective, if people want a little bit of perspective on all this, all you have to do is go back to last year and the minimal amount of people that were allowed to come to games and be a part of it and whatever, and now you can come and be a part of these events. And you know, if I'm somebody's sister and last year I couldn't come because maybe only two people could come or you know, a grandparent or whatever, it's that part of it is really good. So I think, you know, you like the wins and that type of thing, but you also have to look at the overall picture and the fact that we're able to do the things that we really enjoy, and we're doing it kind of in a fashion that we're used to. But it's been good, and I think each of our five sports that we have going on right now have their own little story, if you will. And you know, some of these things are, I'll use wrestling as an example. I mean, if you walk to our trophy case, it's not too hard to figure out the tradition that Bob has built here in wrestling, and been people before Bob have built over the course of time. So, you know, the success that they're having, not necessarily surprising to people that are watching it, but also is a real testament just to the work that goes into that program and the dedication of those kids and the dedication of the coaches. And so, you know, that's an interesting example on the high end of success. And then you look at a program like hockey, where I want to say last year, did they go winless? I think that may be the case.
I think
maybe
so.
The year before, won a couple games, and the other night, the other afternoon, I should say, won their seventh game of the year. So they're 7-10, I believe. And that's, you know, again, for, you know, Chris had told me at the beginning of the year that he thought that they were really starting to turn the corner and thought that this was going to be a real process. And clearly, he was right. You know, they've more than turned the corner. They had a victory over Pines a couple of weeks ago that they hadn't beaten in 15 years or or more. And you know, so it's stories like that, or the girls basketball program. The girls won their fourth game last night, which again doesn't sound like a lot, but you know, where they were starting out the season and where they've been the last couple of years, I think it's one of those stories where they're gaining some momentum, and the girls that have been a part of that for 4 years, really, I think we'll be able at the end of this season, and I'm assuming we're going to pick up a couple more wins and look at that and have some pride in the fact that I think that they're starting to get things going. And I look back when I was at Grafton High School, and I'm not saying this is going to happen here. I hope it does, but I'm not saying that. So if I look at when we were in a really kind of a low place in girls basketball, the 2003 year, we won five games, we followed it up winning two, we followed that up winning nine, and then all of a sudden 2 years later we won a state championship, and then went to state again, and then won another state championship. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but what I am saying is I think, you know, we've got a group of coaches in our program, and this is true from our high school coaches to our middle school coaches, that are doing a really nice job, and I think now girls are looking and saying, hey, this is something that we want to be a part of and something that we're really going to enjoy going forward. So like I said, there's, you know, whether it's you know, the girls basketball or you know, again, boys, nice to pick up another win last night. Boys swim won a mat or meet last week, and again, you know, these are smaller number, you know, let's say wins, if you will, programs, but I think are really gaining some momentum, and I guess that's what makes the overall sports program as interesting as it is, because you do have a lot of different stories to tell, that's for sure.
No doubt, and you're really building, you know, for the future as well. I mean, a lot of these teams are young as well, as, you know, the players that are getting, you know, getting out there are definitely getting great experience as well. And as you've heard here on WJJQ, as we have coverage throughout the winter sports season, you mentioned a couple of the coaches there, and I work with, you know, obviously a lot of the coaches when I interview them, et cetera, and can't say enough about how nice they are to, you know, us here at WJJQ and just interacting with them at games, meets, what have you. You know, talk a little bit about the coaching staffs that you have right now here this year. Some are brand new, right? You know, girls basketball staff is brand new, but then you also have some that have been around for a while, and it's been, you know, just the coaching staffs here that the kids are playing for.
Well, right, and as I mentioned before, so you look at somebody like Bob Guru, and Bob has been around wrestling for a long time, and, mm-hmm. and as I mentioned, the success that Hatchet Wrestling has had is pretty notable in not only this area, but also in the state. And so it's, you know, one of those things where, does it help that he's done this and the experience he's gained and the people that he worked with years ago? Absolutely. And the people that now have followed him and, you know, are part of his coaching staff. So it tells you something when people come out and wrestle at a school, play basketball at a school, I don't care what sport it is, and all of a sudden along the way, then you become a coach at a school, whether it's an assistant or maybe you're a head coach like Jacob is in boys basketball. But I think it's an interesting thing to me where you have people that went to a school that think enough about it and enough about the people that are part of it that they want to be on the coaching end of it. So, you know, so again, Bob is clearly the most, you know, experienced and decorated, if you will, of our winter head coaches. And then Chris, as I mentioned before, in hockey, you know, has really elevated play. And the interesting one, I know last night we lost to Antigo, but I was reading a recap of the game, and it was from their news feed, and this first sentence was, they beat a much improved Tomahawk team. So again, it's easy for me to say that, but when people on the outside are noticing the work that's being done and the, you know, the level of play in our kids, I think that says quite a bit. So you know, again, Chris has really got things going in the right direction. Haven't talked about Melissa today. Again, I'm really lucky to be able to work with Melissa Neiman, and not only the girls' side, but also the boys' side, and just a super knowledgeable coach and really enthusiastic, great with the kids, great with the other coaches, and so really a pleasure to work with. A smaller team that we have, but again, a team that in swimming dual meets, numbers of kids will win you dual meets, and so that we're at a little bit of a disadvantage there, where we, you know, again, we've got some really nice talent. It'll be interesting. We host the conference boys meet here next Friday the 4th at 5 o'clock, and so it'll be interesting to see how we finish there. And I think we're going to have some interesting individual placing there, so that'll be fun. It'll be a fun meet to coach. I touched on Jacob before. Again, you know, a young coach, really. I mean, and one of the first people that I met when I started, and ironically, he was in the gym doing open gym because that's what he does, and he's so dedicated to this. The nice thing for him, and I've told him this many times, are the three guys that are working our high school girls program, John Long and Tim Albert and Jeremy Balky. All four of those guys are tied into each other, and any successful basketball program, and when I say basketball program, I get it, there's a boys' side and a girls' side, but they have to work together. They share the facility, and they're able to share each other's efforts. Last year, during the summer, Jacob was doing everything. He was the open gym guy. He was the camp guy. So now he's got guys on the other side of it that that they work together really well, and they're people that have a relationship and talk to each other and share ideas. And I think that's so very important in a high school setting and in just a coaching staff setting. So I feel really good about, and again, people may look at it and go, well, they've only won a handful of games. I get it. But I also get the fact that if I'm a young girl or a young boy growing up and I have aspirations about playing basketball and I look at the people that ultimately will coach me when I get to the high school, I feel really good about it. I feel very good about it. I feel good about it from a basketball perspective and I feel good about it from a people perspective because if I'm going to be mentored or taught or coached by any of the people that I just mentioned, I'd feel in any of these sports, I'd feel really, really good about it. And if I'm a parent and your son or daughter plays for one of the coaches that I've just mentioned in the last couple minutes, I'd feel extremely good about it.
That's great to hear, and I feel the same way working with them as well. Scott Parsons joining us here on the Sports Q, Tomahawk High School Athletic Director. And as we look towards tomorrow's schedule, I know there's a couple of cancellations that came down today. So if you could run over those.
We did, yeah. So we were going to play Elko in girls basketball, and they had an injury situation. And again, there's some of these teams we play are smaller in numbers, and so they weren't able to field a team. Ultimately, we'd like to make this game up somewhere along the line. I know the tournament's coming up. We'll see if we're going to be able to pull it off. This is one we had actually rescheduled already, so we'll see. And then just a couple minutes ago, Antigo touched base with us, and they've got a couple kids that are sick, and so they were only going to have a couple swimmers to send, so we are going to postpone our swim meet for tomorrow night, and then looking maybe to reschedule it next Tuesday. I know we have the conference meet, but we'd like to get that meet in, and I think they would too, so we're going to assess where they're at probably Friday and make a call on that. So if you are looking for something to do tomorrow and those were two options you were exploring, we have wrestling tomorrow night. So we've got Mosany coming in for wrestling tomorrow night. And if you can't make it, obviously, Hunter, you will bring it to him. So, again, you will not go sportsless on your Thursday night here in Tomahawk.
No doubt about it. And, you know, it's a great update on all the different teams, all the different coaches and programs we have going on, some special things being built there at Tomahawk High School. And Scott, always appreciate the time. I do want to ask you one last question that is off of Tomahawk Sports because I do want to, you know, I was hoping when I had you on this week we were going to be previewing an NFC Championship game for the Green Bay Packers, and I thought we'd be previewing it. NFC Championship game, as I've talked about throughout this show so far tonight. What are your thoughts on the Packers losing that one to the 49ers?
Well, as you remember, Friday night at the girls game, I walked in and said to you, I looked at you as you were getting ready to do your pregame show, and I said 35-16. So fortunately, I was not on last Wednesday.
Right.
I probably would have lost all credibility that I ever had with that, but that's okay. Oh my gosh, I was just totally shocked. Absolutely shocked. It was like, you know, nothing that I saw coming, and there's probably a million ways to look at it. Oh my gosh, the special teams were horrible and whatever. Ultimately, you got to score more than 10 points. So that is one. And you know, again, I thought about you that because you obviously were at the game, and I would bet, and I think I read one of the things that you said, that you and one of the other reporters that were there just looked at each other and you guys were just totally stunned, which I totally get. I'm sure everybody was.
It was a stunned crowd. It was a stunned press box. And yeah, because that was just not the result that everybody was expecting. Sure. I mean, what if it was, you know, maybe it was going to be a, you know, 30-27 win like it was, you know, maybe in, you know, in Santa Clara earlier this season, but that kind of game and that way they lost. Yeah, not at all. All right. Last, I'll leave you with this. Of the four teams left, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Well, it'd be hard not to say Kansas City at this point in time. I don't, and again, and I have nothing against Mahomes, and I have nothing against Andy Reid. I mean, I'm actually probably an Andy Reid guy in certain respects, but and I don't want the Rams. I do not want the Rams. I'm going to say the 49ers. I just think sometimes you see those teams, right? And this might remind you, without the Hall of Fame quarterback, obviously, of the Packers, the year that they went on the road and won those games and then ultimately went to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. And part of it is because does it make me feel better because they beat the Packers and they went? I don't know if it does or it doesn't, but there's something about them. They've physically beaten the Rams both times they played them. And there's no reason to think that they won't do it again. And the day that I trust Matt Stafford will be the day that I trust Matt Stafford, and I don't think that's coming anytime soon. So
gotcha.
I'm going to say 49ers, and I've been dead wrong on everything in the playoffs so far, so we'll see.
We shall see. So count on the Rams and Bengals in the Super Bowl is what you're saying then.
Well,
the opposite.
The two words that may not come into play there, count on, but that's what I'm going to say.
So. Exactly. That's a good point. Well, Scott, really appreciate the time. You're Scott Parsons, Tomahawk High School Athletic Director, joining us here on the Sports Cue tonight. Scott, thanks so much for the time, and I'm sure we'll see you tomorrow night.
Looking forward to it, Hunter. Thanks for having me on, and go Hatchets.
Thank you, Scott. Scott Parsons, Tomahawk Athletic Director, joining us on the Sports Cue. We'll be right back to wrap up the show on the Big Cue.
Bringing Wisconsin sports to the Northwoods, this is the Sports Cue with Hunter Baumgart on WJJQ.
Here's a great idea for the whole family, a billiards table. While supplies last at the pool, people, if you purchase a billiards table over $5,000, you can take $1,000 off a sauna or 10% off up to $1,000 on that new hot tub you've been wishing for. Stay fit and save 20% off the base price on swimming spas. Plan now for the spring and save 15% off any in-stock pool, and all in-stock billiards tables are 20% off. Don't miss these January specials from the Pool People. Browse online at poolpeople.com or stop by the location near you in Rhinelander, Schofield, and Stevens Point, Wisconsin's largest distributor and dealer of swimming pools, pool tables, and spas.
Wrapping up tonight's show here on Northwoods 92.5 WJJQ, I'm Hunter Baumgart, your host of the Sports Q, 5:30 until 7 each Wednesday night. If you missed any part of tonight's show, we'll post it on the Audio Center at WJJQ.com. That'll be tomorrow morning. That'll be up, and you can listen to as much or as little of the program as you'd like. Jordy Ramirez joined me tonight, Packers reporter and football scout, to go over all the details of the Packers' loss to the 49ers. I gave my thoughts on the loss. And also we talked to, of course, as you just heard, athletic director from Tomahawk High School, Scott Parsons, as well. So if you missed any part of the show, WJJQ.com. Go to the Audio Center tomorrow morning. My thanks to the two guests that joined me tonight. Thanks to those who interacted there on social media. And we talked about that earlier in the show. Feel free to like the Facebook page, Hunter Baumgart Sports. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Hunter B on Air. And also follow us at WJJQ on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as well. The Bucks are playing tonight. We got to get an update.
And one Giannis on the flush.
Sports Q, Milwaukee Bucks update.
All right. Haven't been able to play that in a while. Glad we could get that back. And the Cavaliers with a 59-51 lead on the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are coming in 30-19. Cavs are a surprising 29-19. Cavaliers over the Bucks right now, 59-51, 1:54 to go in the first half there. The Bucks will play the Knicks coming up on Friday night at 9 o'clock. And then they will play again coming up on Sunday against the Nuggets. So they've got a couple of games this weekend, and then they host the Wizards next Tuesday. Badgers men's basketball team, they are going to be playing coming up on tomorrow, actually. Tomorrow afternoon, a weird afternoon game for the Badgers men's basketball team as they play Nebraska. That is a 4 o'clock tip-off. And the Badgers men's basketball team then hosts Minnesota Sunday at noon, and then they'll play next Wednesday against Illinois in a big one there. Thanks so much for listening to the Sports Q here tonight. Michael McGovern up next. It's been a lot of fun. We'll talk to you next week on the Sports Q. We'll talk to you at midnight here on WJJQ. I'll take you on the overnight show, of course, tomorrow on the midday show as well. Hatchet Wrestling tomorrow night, Hatchet Hockey on Friday night, right here on WJJQ. And as always, stay positive.
You've been listening to the Sports Q on WJJQ. Be sure to join Hunter again next Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. for the latest sports news around the state and in our Northwoods community, right here on Northwoods 92.5 WJJQ Tomahawk.